On March 1, 1781, 3.5 years after they were endorsed by the Continental Congress, the Articles of Confederation were officially ratified when the last state, Maryland, gave its approval. The unseemly delay could be explained by the conspicuous fact that a war was going on, which inevitably deflected attention from all other business, but the specific reason was that the landless states, like Maryland, refused to ratify until all the states with extensive western claims, Virginia most prominently, agreed to cede their claims to Congress. The president of the Continental Congress, Samuel Huntington, declared the creation of a new political entity called the Confederation Congress, which established a perpetual union between the 13 United States. To mark the occasion, 13 cannons were fired on the hill overlooking the Philadelphia Harbor, and that salvo was answered by 13 cannons from the frigate John Paul Jones. In the evening, a grand exhibition of fireworks was staged at the State House, and all the vessels in the harbor were decorated and illuminated. At almost the same time that Americans were celebrating their newly declared union, a pamphleteer in London, Josiah Tucker, predicted that any vision of an emergent American nation-state would prove to be a mirage, one of the idlest and most visionary notions that ever was conceived by the writers of romance. Tucker spoke for all those English and European pundits who regarded the very term United States as a comical oxymoron. The diversity of climates, competing regional interests, and long-standing political disagreements made it impossible to imagine that Americans could ever, as he put it, be united into one compact empire under any species of government whatsoever. What had brought them together in the summer of 1776 was their common desire to secede from that empire. If they failed in that effort, and the issue in the spring of 1781 remained uncertain, Americans would revert back to their identity as British subjects. If they succeeded, they would dissolve into a political stew of local, state, and regional principalities likely to end up fighting one another. Their fate, predicted Tucker, seems to be a disunited people till the end of time. A closer look at the recently ratified document that promoted all those salvos and illuminations reveals that Tucker's skepticism about any emergent American nation-state was not that far off the mark. For the Articles of Confederation were not, and were not intended to be, a political framework for a national government. Indeed, the Articles were not designed to establish any kind of government at all. As its name suggests, the Articles created a confederation of 13 sovereign states that were nations themselves, entering, as Article 3 put it, into a firm league of friendship with each other for their common defense, the security of their liberties, and their mutual and general welfare. It was less a constitution than a diplomatic treaty among sovereign powers. The key provision was Article 2. Each state retains its sovereignty, freedom, and independence, and every power, jurisdiction, and right, which is not by this confederation expressly delegated to the United States in Congress assembled. Those powers, jurisdictions, and rights were quite few, chiefly to resolve border disputes between states, establish standard weights and measures, and a common currency, though the states were not prohibited from printing their own money, and create a common treasury from funds raised by taxes on the states to pay for the war. Whether the states were legally obliged to pay the tax levies was left ambiguous. Article 8 vested authority in the state legislatures to comply within the time agreed upon by the United States in Congress assembled. For 3 years, the vast majority of states had failed to pay their share of taxes to support the Continental Army, leaving a legacy of confusion about where the power of the purse ultimately resided. In the absence of a clear resolution in the Articles, it effectively resided in the states.